Hello, everyone, and welcome to the September 2nd edition of the TMS Wikis Tuesday Night Discussion Book Group. Thank you for joining us the day after Labor Day. Hope you had a great weekend. This week, we will be discussing several chapters from Nicole Sachs LCSW's book, The Meaning of Truth. We'll be focusing on chapters 5.5, where she discusses really the heart of the book about journal speak, and then chapter 6, where she starts doing examples. After that, we will move on to next week, most likely, the remainder of Chapter 6 and then Chapter 7. So thank you all for joining us. Before we begin, I'd like to do a brief disclaimer and just say that we participate in this group as peers rather than as medical or mental health practitioners, in the sense that no one here is able to, at least on this phone call, offer medical or mental health advice. If you need medical or mental health advice, if you think you might have TMS, then I strongly suggest going to see a TMS physician. And or TMS therapist, someone who is properly licensed and can give you the care you need. Of course, everyone on the call is speaking their opinions only. It's an open discussion. Hope you enjoy the show. And so with that, let us get started. Chapter 5.5 is part of a two-chapter sequence in which Nicole goes over her personal story. Chapter 5, I think of as more the physical chapter, in which she is telling us about her traumatic and painful experiences dealing with her back pain from the very beginning of her life, leading up to learning about TMS, and having some help from that, but not complete remission. So we end Chapter 5 with her frustration. First some progress and then a terrible relapse, and she says, I need to see Dr. Sarno with the help of her mother. Her mom pays, and she goes and she sees him. And do you want to tell us about the visit, just to kind of lead into Chapter 5.5?
Sure, yeah, I'm happy to. And I just also I saw that my mom signed in, so I know she's grinning over there that she paid for it. Okay, so basically, my TMS journey started, as you know, if you read the book, and even if you didn't, you know, it's easy to catch up, when I was about 17, 18, I mean, really when I was about 10, but I mean, really acutely when I was young. And I guess the most important thing for us that you're touching upon is the relapse, because what I say at the end of the chapter is, this time, it was real. And I think that people need to get that, because oftentimes we label something as TMS and we're like, okay, you know, I'm healed, look at me, I did it. And then something happens that tricks you into making you feel as if it's more real this time, and you can get just as embroiled in the whole BS of this faux medical problem you have, based upon the way it feels so much realer. And so that's why I thought it was really important to explain that in the chapter, that when I picked up that walker and I carried my son down those two steps and I felt that hot knife drag across my back, I was certain that all the work, and I didn't do that much work prior, but I had read Healing Back Pain. I totally got it. I totally decided I had TMS, and I was told I would never have children biologically because of the whole, you know, pressure of the baby on my back. Had already had two kids, so obviously I knew that I wasn't as messed up as the doctors had told me a decade before. However, when I got that second really acute bout of TMS, that was real. And that's something that I really need people to understand, that it wasn't any more real or not real, or whatever you want to call it, than the last time, but I was tricked. And that is something that our brains are very tricky. And so, like, if you resolve your back pain, but all of a sudden you get migraines, people are like, oh, well, now I have a migraine disorder, instead of just thinking, perhaps it's my TMS moving throughout my system. And it most likely is. So what happened to me in terms of what Forrest is touching upon is that I was full on tricked, and I really suffered more in that 1 to 2 years of chronic pain, first the acute incident and then the chronic pain that followed, than I probably ever suffered in my life. Crying myself to sleep more nights than not. I mean, really horrible. Until finally realizing I needed to go see the man. I needed to go to Dr. Sarno. It wasn't for me at the time. The book wasn't enough, which is a lot of the reason I wrote my own book, because what I give to people in this book, if you get to the how chapter, is what Dr. Sarno gave me that day that I saw him. And a lot of people need to bridge that gap between believing that they have TMS and really understanding how, at least in Dr. Sarno's words, you can heal yourself, whether you can do it on your own or with the help of a therapist. So do you think that kind of gets to the meat of it, Forrest?
Absolutely. That was great. And it's just so terrifying when the symptoms flare up, especially in a new area, right? And is that how it got you? So it tricked you? And
terrifying.
Why
yes.
Is it so powerful? Is it fear?
It's fear, and it's because it piggybacks onto a million other thoughts. You know, like, that pain didn't just mean, ouch, I'm in pain. It meant, am I going to be a parent? Am I going to be a good parent? Am I going to be able to be a functioning member of society? Am I going to be able to feel good about myself? Am I damaged? Am I, you know, embarrassed? Am I going to have to drop out of the things that I enjoy? So all those things go hand in hand with the pain. And then the fear is like a tidal wave that just goes over you. And if you drown in it, you drown in it. And I don't mean like you're going to die. I mean, it's like a re-drowning every day that so many people experience. And it breaks my heart, which is why I'm so passionate about my work.
Yeah. I read somewhere that the amygdala and the lower, or the emotional centers of the brain, they actually shut off your frontal cortex and you know, take away your tools. They cut off the blood supply. They take away your tools for using your rational brain to talk yourself down, because the pain is just... And to realize that it's probably just TMS, but the pain just shuts that off. So it's powerful stuff. And the people who were on the call earlier, you probably heard someone who I was talking to who was dealing with that. Our friend Paula is struggling with a lot of fear, and it's tough to control. It is tough to control. And so what I suggested is that for her to control that fear, it would be a good idea to start working with a practitioner who can help control the panic.
Yeah, absolutely. And Forrest, what I want to say in this moment, because I feel like it's so important for anyone listening and for anyone ever to listen, because I know you record this, and I'm sure many people
absolutely
listen to after the fact.
Yep.
This pain is real. Like, I need people to understand this. You are suffering, and it is real. It doesn't mean just because it has its basis in psychological and emotional, you know, crises in your soul and in your past, doesn't mean that it hurts any less or any different than someone who has their leg broken and they're sitting there with the pain. Like, my pain was so real, I couldn't walk. And I think that, I guess what I want to say to everybody is, a lot of people get turned off by the concept of TMS or mind-body syndrome or PPD or whatever it is that you want to call it, because they say, these people are trying to tell me that my pain isn't real. So when I say it tricked me, I'm not trying to say that any pain I had was more real than any other pain. What I'm trying to say is that psychologically, I decided I was damaged. And that is, yep, a very different feeling than just saying, shit, I've got another TMS thing to deal with. All right, well, this sucks, but I'm going to have to get to it and start working it out. You know, very different than the panic which accompanies, I'm done, something really different happened to me this time, and I'm screwed. And I can't impart that enough, that this pain, there's nothing that's not real. The word psychosomatic doesn't mean your pain doesn't hurt you as if you severed a limb. What it means is, instead of its basis being in a structural abnormality in your body, the basis, the beginning point of the pain starts somewhere emotional or psychological. But because our brains are everything, you know, like, people are like, well, it's not in my head. But the truth is, every single thing you do is in your head. You can't taste a delicious thing if it's not in your head. You can't pick up your kids if it's not in your head. The brain signals the body to do every single thing it does, right? So I feel as if it's such an important thing, because I've been following, and I know, Forrest, you know about this, the movie, the documentary being made, The Story of Pain. Now, I don't know where he's at because I haven't talked to him in a few weeks, but I saw on his Twitter feed somebody wrote a really awful thing. It was horrible. It was just like, yeah. Dr. Sarno is a hateful man who's trying to tell me that my fibromyalgia isn't real and this is my pain and how dare he. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is I just always want to just say that so people feel comfortable. Nobody is telling you your pain isn't real.
And I think this audience gets that, though. The fibromyalgia and the chronic fatigue syndrome people, they always make that mistakes, but you know, it always is a signal that they haven't even read the post that they're responding to.
But it's important, just because if this is out there and if anybody hears that, that's something that is so important to clear up, because it's not just to defend Dr. Sarno's honor, which I always will, but it's not just that. It's to say you hurt yourself by being defensive. You hurt yourself by shutting it out. Like, open your mind, open your heart to what might heal you, instead of saying, you know, fuck everyone that doesn't agree with me.
Amen.
So, all right. Said my piece. Soapbox.
All right. Sounds good. All right. So luckily at this point, this amazing thing, and you went and visited this amazing man, and you wrote, kind of as a standout, you said, I will do anything. So tell me what he told you to do. Now, I'm going to trust that everyone here has already read either your book or a book by Dr. Sarno. So emphasize the things which are most important and which you learned from him that was most special about. What was the key of the heart of what it was that he told you to do?
Well, I believe that it started with him throwing away my novel.
Yes, I love that.
If you've read my book, you understand this, but I'll just quickly recap for people who haven't. I created, upon knowing I was going to get an hour of this man's time, literally a novel. It was this thick of every time my back hurt, when I bend this way, when I change a diaper, when I reach for this. Like, I had this very, very, I was such a good student, right? Like, all our TMSers were we're all straight A's. And I brought him this novel, and I said, and he's this adorable little guy who's like shorter than me, and he's in his lab coat, and he sits down, he says, so, you know, what's going on? And I hand him, I say, this is every time I've hurt. And he literally took it. He didn't even look at it. He tossed it in the garbage can that was sitting next to me. I mean, well, it was between us. And I was like, oh, my God. You know, and he said, let's go into the exam room. Let me examine you. And we did a full, you know, I got into the gown and he did the whole structural. He's a medical doctor. And he came, he said, yeah, you have TMS. Get back in the office. And so he sat down, and that's when the healing really began. Because, yes, it was traumatic, like, for 10 seconds when he threw away my novel, but I had it on my computer, so it was cool. But for the most part, it told me he has confidence that it doesn't matter if it hurts when I pick up a toy this way. Like, that wasn't what the point was. The point was that I needed to address the emotional and psychological things that were happening within me. So, and upon that, he told me to do what I tell everybody else to do. And I completely, you know, give him all the credit in terms of the process of making the three lists and then journaling through the things that rise to be the most troublesome in your life and seeing where it brings you. And I took it on like a job. I took it on like a student. I really dedicated myself to my healing in a very voracious fashion, and that's what got me pain-free.
Excellent. Anyone want to ask any questions of Nicole from what we've covered so far? Or so we're about to start the actual journaling, but does anyone have any questions?
I don't. The question I got that it seems to be kind of different with everybody is when you did start journaling, you know, which one of the three, but let me see right here, which one of the three, like the childhood, the daily life, and your personality, was more so the instigator in your own mind, or was it, I mean, I know it's all three. I know that. I know that everybody has to put all three of those together and understand what they are and apply it to their lives and make changes. But at the same time, it seems like some of us are more under the, see, a lot of people say they don't want to go back and dig up stuff. So they don't look at it like the past was any problem. So they'll deal with all the current pressures. And for me, like going back, I didn't think I had any problems in my past. And I dealt with it, I started dealing with all my current pressures. But then after all the current pressures was dealt with and I still had the pain, and I went back and started digging up the past and getting deeper and deeper, then I started seeing a lot of stuff that was there that was really problematic. And then that's when I started having those aha moments. Mm-hmm. That's when I started feeling shifts. That's when I started feeling differences. I guess the question I started with really wasn't a question. It was more, you know, like all when you get into the journal speak, you'll speak more about this. But for me, it was all three phases. It seems to me like when we're helping people out at TMS Wiki and wanting to give them advice or whatever, it seems like some of them want to pick either, you know, the now,
right,
or the past. It's either one or the other, and they don't think they can combine them. Anyway, can you emphasize on some of that?
Sure. No, sure thing, Eric. I think that you are right to say that everyone is different. And so what I like to say to people is once you create your lists, and everybody has a different way that they can most, you know, adequately and effectively be helped. But I always say create the list at the very least. Even if you're not a journaler at heart, create the list so you know what you're dealing with. I think that you don't know, and this is why I'm passionate about journaling. You don't know what's going to be the thing that heals you the most until you give yourself the permission and have the bravery to really go there. And what I write about in my book, and today is actually quite a poignant day for me to speak about this, because I sent my daughter to her first day of seventh grade today, the baby that I discuss in the book, who was two at the time. And the person she is, I mean, just this amazing, she's my best friend in the world, and I adore her, and she adores me. But when I was struggling with my worst TMS, what I needed to say out loud is I hate her. And it was a horrible thing to say, and I didn't have to say it to anyone but me, and I certainly didn't for a long time until I got the bravery to speak about it on the Sarno panel and then incorporate it into my practice and then write it into my book. But, she wasn't what I asked for, what I expected. She didn't look like I expected. She wasn't the baby that I expected. And I hated her for it, for the moment, until I understood that who I really hated was myself for being so judgmental of a baby. And once I got all of that stuff, you know, excavated, and, you know, as my good friend Mark from the panel always says, I went into my darkest room and I turned on the light and I looked at the ugly, ugly thoughts that I had, I was able to say, I don't hate my baby. I don't hate myself. I just had this fucked up thing that I had thought of, and I need to let it go, and I need to parent her for who she is, and I need to, you know, honor myself for who I am. And then as soon as that happened, I was so free. It was over. And that's what people don't understand. It's just thoughts. It's shameful, but it's not shameful once you just look at it and say, okay, you know, you're a human being. You're all right. You know, you had some ugly thoughts. You're okay. And the fact that I did that, about 80% of my back pain diminished within a few days of that aha moment. And it doesn't happen for everyone, but it was a really huge one for me because I was a full-time parent. I had her and I had a newborn who was, you know, my son who's now 10. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that that was pivotal for me. But it doesn't mean that the current day-to-day life would be pivotal for someone else. I mean, Dr. Sarno writes in his book, I think it's Mind Body Prescription, because I read all of them, that there was a woman who was sexually abused as a child and she was bedridden. Forrest, I think you probably would remember this.
Ellen.
Yep, and she was using a bedpan. Like, and as soon as she was able to let this rise in her and just sob it out, I think she was out of pain in like a week. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, some of these examples are so miraculous, but they're true. They're all true stories. I mean, nothing is doctored. I've spent so much time with the man and among his colleagues and his patients and my own patients. None of it is doctored. That's what is so remarkable about TMS. It's like you're only as sick as your secret. So does that help you out, Eric?
Yeah, and it sounds like, you know, the only person you have to be true with is yourself. You don't have to go out and tell the world this deep, dark secret. It was a great aha moment because you realized that you was the one creating this thought that was giving you the pain. And then when you let it, you somehow figured it out when you looked in the mirror, you went in the room, and then it gave you this aha moment that released the pain. And
right.
That's the part where, you know, I would like to somehow get everybody to understand that part, that you finally get that aha moment. You know, if anybody hasn't had an aha moment, then she just basically said what an aha moment was. And like for me, it was understanding I was mad at my niece and it was keeping the pain there.
Yeah.
And then when I realized through a dream, it actually came to me through a dream that I was mad at my niece because I've been journaling. And I actually journaled it that day that I was mad at her. I talked about it in my journal. And that night I had a dream that she was the reason that I had pain in my body. And the next day, that was the aha moment, and the pain shifted, and about 80% of it went away, but, you know, like you said about the other thing. So, and it was really just my own self holding anger inside my own self. I had no reason to hold any anger at her because we'd already forgave and hugged and told each other we loved each other. But I walked away and held that anger, see?
That's right.
And then when I walked away, and I held it unconsciously because I thought it was over with, Nicole. I thought it was done. But I still felt something, you know, I still felt the pain, you know.
Yes.
So I went and journaled, and that night when I dreamed about it, I'm not saying that this is all going to come through your dreams or anything, because I only had a few dreams that helped me, but they did. I'm not really in the dreams as much, but at the same time, when anything that helps can help. But the journaling is my point. When I journaled about it, it brought it to my conscious somehow.
That's
so at
right.
least I could dream about that's it and get that aha moment, yeah.
That's an excellent point, because something I failed to say that Eric brings up is that what I was journaling on that day was just the word motherhood. I had absolutely no idea where that journal entry was going to take me. I was going through my list, and I knew that motherhood was a huge part of it because, I mean, I was a full-time mom at the time. And my kids were, you know, 2 and 0. So, I mean, you know, it was obviously, or no, actually, no, they were 10 months and 3. But the point is that when I was doing this, I was not knowing that any of this was going to come up. That's where the journaling was priceless, because I was writing, I'm tired, it's exhausting, the baby was up last night, and Isabella always wants me, and I don't know how to divide my time, and, you know, I was an only child, I don't even know how to have these two kids. Like, I was having these moments, but then I started getting like, oh, shit, it's more than that. And that is something that people need to understand, because it is not a happy thing to write down, I hate my kid. It is a horrible feeling. But I had to embrace the fact that I just needed to say it. And the most important thing, after we purge our ugliest thoughts, our dirtiest, ugliest, blackest thoughts, is you say, you take a look at them, don't hide, and say, all right, well, I'm a human being. You know, I have a wonderful analogy that I once heard, which is, if everybody on your street were to drag their garbage, their baggage, out onto the curb and set it out, you would look left, look right, left, right, and then you would say, I'll take mine, and you would drag it back into your own house. We all have our shit to deal with. Nobody's is any prettier or uglier than anybody else's. And if we all sit in shame over what we have to deal with. We are the only ones who suffer. Like you just said, Eric, you know, we're the vessel that the acid is stored. You know, my favorite quote, the acid does more damage to the vessel in which it is stored than that on which it is poured. We're the ones hating. We're the ones angry and holding on to grudges. That's our garbage that we just dragged out onto the curb, you know?
A powerful thing. Do you mind if I connect this to another book? This is what you're saying is reminding me of a passage in another TMS book by another Sarno patient. Do you mind if I compare it to that? Okay, good.
I don't know who it is, but go ahead.
Steve Kanena, I guess, who set up the panels.
Steve! Yeah, I used to sit on the panel with him. He was on my right.
Yeah. So his book is Use Your Mind to Heal Your Body. And he has a chapter called The Aha Moment. Coincidentally, since that's the phrase that we've been using here. And he describes it as being a two-step process that he learned from his Sarno therapist, Eric Sherman. For him, his issues surrounded his father. He was a good Italian boy, and I'll save you the details. But so he had, he said, in therapy, and this was the awe moment, I discovered an entire reservoir of rage towards my father that I had not been aware of or owned. In therapy, I saw, felt, and understood my rage. I realized, wow, I am really furious. I am actually engaged, enraged. And that was the awe moment. And so his first thought is, okay, I need to discharge this rage. I need to get rid of this rage. I need to fix that. And his therapist said, no, do you really need to do that? I mean, this is an internal job. It's actually about you relating to you. So he says, you know, I'd always, up until that moment, I'd always tried to have the right thoughts and even the right feelings. In therapy, as I learned to allow myself to feel anger, hate, rage, disappointment, jealousy, loneliness, sadness, triumph, success, victory, the full range of human emotions, it sounds like that was the ha moment that he describes. When I learned that it's all right and in fact normal to have bad feelings, I no longer needed to use the pain to distract or protect myself from these emotions. That was the ha. My therapist said, you know, Steve, I'd be concerned for you if you didn't have those feelings.
Right.
What a load off my back. Is that what you're talking about here? Like for you, I guess the awe moment would be recognizing the hate that part of you was feeling for your daughter, and then the ha moment was recognizing that it was okay to feel that, and that what you were really angry at was yourself for putting so much pressure on your relationship. Is that a legitimate parallel to draw between your book and Steve's book? And
absolutely. So, I mean, force is essentially the same exact thing. You know, the only thing I'll say that I feel is left out from what the passage you read is that once you have the ah and the ha, it is incredibly important to immediately, you know, I say this in the patience and kindness chapter toward the end of the book, you know, when we take the shot of tequila, you immediately suck the lime or whatever it is. Like, you need to give yourself up. You have to chase that horrible feeling with patience and love and kindness for yourself, because you're just a human being. You're a flawed little soft little thing, just like we all are, okay? Dr. Sarno used to stand up and say, I don't want you to speak from that 35-year-old you, that 70-year-old you, that 20-year-old you. I want you to speak from that 5-year-old inside of yourself that's having a fucking temper tantrum because you're so angry that you can't get rid of your pain. You know, he wanted us to go to that level. And that is where, as adults, as grown-ups, we don't feel comfortable going. So if we're going to do that dirty ugly, then we have to make sure to follow it up, to chase it immediately with patience and kindness and love for oneself, which is, I just said something horrible that I feel terrible about, but okay, I'm okay. I'm a human being. I'm flawed. Everybody else is the same as me. I'm a member of the human race. I'm okay. There's no need to hate myself for feeling this way, because without that forgiveness, we can throw ourselves back into worse TMS, because what a horrible person am I? I just said I hated a baby. Like, you know, you can't have that cycle diminish your healing. With patience and kindness and love and forgiveness for oneself, for what we feel, is paramount.
Gotcha. So that patience and kindness and love is like the antidote for the negativity.
It's a chaser.
It's a chaser. All right, a chaser it is. Chaser it is. Any questions?
It's like an antidote. After you dig up the issue, after you get to the issue, because so many people think that, you know, just the positive thinking is the answer sometimes when they read through the TMS books, and they'll skip certain things, and sometimes they think it's, well, it's sort of like the people that doesn't really read the books, and then they just give out what they think it's about, and then they'll say, you know, well, it's just positive thinking, and it's not.
No.
The positive stuff comes in after you face all the dirty laundry, you know?
Yeah.
After you just came to your consciousness of what you're doing to yourself, you know? That's when the positive reinforcement needs to come in there.
Yes, sir. I agree.
Okay. Go ahead, Forrest. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, does anyone else have any questions about that? Maybe, does anyone else have any awe moments that they need a ha moment for? Any emotions that you're struggling with that maybe we could use as an example, and you could get feedback from the author herself. Or any questions or comments. So, certainly feel free to jump in if you have it. That was certainly powerful stuff. And thank you for bringing up that idea of adding that positivity afterwards. I do want to go back a little bit and talk about some of the more nitty-gritty of the journaling. So the first phase is you have to dig up the dirty ugly. You talked about first you write down the lists, and then you have to dig. You have to dig. In another place a little bit later on, you described what you were doing at the deli when you were stuck. And I think a lot of us can relate to the kind of the stuck deli phase. You said, I'm going to sit down and unleash the demons of my mind. I will whine and complain about my screwed up childhood, the failings of my parents, the stress of my daily life leads me to stay up all night, the exhaustion of parenthood. But somehow it felt like as you were writing that, part of you was saying something was missing. And of just at that level, and you went to the next level later on. But for the people who were listening, what do you do if you're trying to unleash the demons of your mind, but it isn't getting out just yet? How do you go deeper and take it to the next level? Are there techniques you can offer or suggestions?
Sure.
What advice do you give?
You know, the first thing that I have to say is that, and I used to say this on the panel all the time, I am a therapist, so this was easier for me than it would be for people who don't have the acumen to dig into their mind. I mean, you know, I don't know if everyone could do this. I had, you know, 7 years of education about this before, you know. So I guess what I'm saying is I don't want anyone to expect more of themselves than is naturally their thing, you know. I am not a math and science person. I needed a tutor for the SATs to barely pass math. Like, so everyone has their strengths and their weaknesses. This just happens to be one of my strengths. But I will say, Forrest, that what happened for me is I had an inner itch. I had a feeling like I wasn't really getting to what Dr. Sarno must have been talking about when he said something emotional could cause this much pain, because I was in so much pain. And so that was like my realization. But the best tip I can give you, first of all, if you can't do this on your own, solicit help. There's more therapists all the time that are open to this, and I know Forrest has a great list on the wiki of a lot of people that you could contact. Get some help, even if you can just, you know, we spend money on so many things. We go out to dinner. We buy our kids, you know, a balloon at the fair. It costs $5, and then a hot dog costs another $3. Like, you can save enough money to have a couple sessions, if anyone can. And I feel like it's, you have to prioritize yourself. You have to say, I'm worth it. I'm suffering. I can't be this parent or this employee or this daughter or son or spouse if I'm going to be struck with this level of pain all the time, I'm going to be someone who's depressed and panicked, because all of us are when we're in that much pain. Having said that, if you're trying to do it alone through the journaling and you feel like you're getting there, this is the best thing I can say. Just free write. Like, a lot of times I would put my pen to paper and I would be like, I don't have anything to say. And so I would start writing. I have nothing to say. I have nothing to say. And then it would become, this makes me angry. I feel angry. Why the hell am I even sitting here? I could be doing so many things today. I have to do this? Fuck this. Why am I feeling this angry? Why? And it's just, speak to yourself. Speak to yourself like you would speak to the most precious person in your life. Like, if my kid was suffering, I wouldn't rest until I was able to sit with them and have them be able to feel better. Don't rob yourself of that same privilege. Sit with yourself. Ask in. Say, you know, I hate sitting here. This chair is too hard. I wish I was at the beach. I mean, just anything. And it will get you rolling if you are being honest with yourself. Does that help? Is that like sort of
where absolutely you're going? Yeah, that's the technique.
Yeah.
Well, good. Okay, so, and one thing which I think helped you, just looking at your story, is it felt like you could also tell that you were holding back something, and that might have really helped you. You said you felt like you were lying, like that this was not the journaling that was going to save you, and that gave you kind of the boost that you needed to go to the next step.
Yes.
All right. So it's really, really interesting for me to be able to compare it to that aha moment, because it seems like that was really, what was that core to the Sarno technique, the idea that you have an unacceptable emotion and the key is to find the unacceptable emotion and then accept the emotion. It wasn't necessarily about discharging the emotion, it was about accepting it.
Yes, but I think in order to accept it fully in the way that we need to, we have to discharge it, if only to ourselves.
Gotcha. Okay. So you need to do a little bit of that raging.
Yeah, you do. And even if it doesn't feel like raging, you just have to be able to say it out loud. I mean, you know, I have a client who once, I mean, he barely even could choke it out. He was like, I don't believe in God. And I was like, okay, you know, it's just a feeling, you know, let's go there. But he had been brought up by Pentecostal parents. And so to say that out loud, he literally felt like lightning was going to come down and kill him. And, you know, what might seem like hell to him to say that to another person might be like, blah, whatever, I'm agnostic or I'm an atheist. But for him, he needed to say it. He needed to accept what he felt was so dark and ugly within himself. So I think that, yes, it needs to be purged. And if it's only to oneself, when I fully healed, the only person who knew these things was me. Right. I mean, I've come a long way in terms of sharing my story and, you know, having my job be this. But really, it had to do with me allowing myself to feel it.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's interesting. Now, you started giving an example, the Pentecostal example. I like that a lot. So why don't we move on a little bit, and you can start telling us a little bit about the example of Mikey.
Okay.
Because examples help us understand in a deeper way. So do you want to introduce us to Mikey and what Mikey struggled with, what he was trying to do, and then a little bit about why he couldn't do it?
All right. Give me one second. I got a book I want to refer to.
All right.
The reason that I'm grabbing a copy of, this is the hardcover, by the way, and it's so pretty. It's just so expensive that nobody buys it because I'm still self-published, even though it's getting better. I will say to our little group right here that the editor and chief of Psychology Today magazine has requested and received a copy of my book.
Wonderful.
Awesome.
Trying really hard to get the message out there, but anyway, the reason I'm opening it is because in order to protect my clients, every one of these examples is like five people's stories into one. because I never wanted anyone to be recognizable, because it's my professional responsibility. So I know I know who Mikey is, and I know everything I said about him, but I just kind of want to be very specific when you're asking me this question, because I want to be responsible. Okay, here we go. All right, Mikey. Okay. So the essence of what I was getting to in this example is that this was a man. Now, first of all, I never want to say that a man or a woman has a harder or an easier time, because it really is about who we are. You know, I know many men who can spill their guts, and then I know many women who can just can't even bear to even cry in front of me, and then I can tell you the flip side of the opposite, you know. But the stereotype in our society is that men are real buttoned up and they're going to have trouble with their emotions. The person, and although it's several people, the one who most inspired me with this example was a very communicative man. He was incredibly able to talk to me, and still is one of my clients. And the thing is that even though he was able to come into this room that I'm sitting in right now and spill, he still felt the pressure on the outside world to be something. Very Irish Catholic, very, very much responsibility placed on the family. Never disrespect the family, never disrespect God, never disrespect elders, which is great. I never stand in front of anyone's values. But if you yourself are suffering within that paradigm, it needs to be discussed between you and yourself instead of hiding. Right, Forrest? You understand what I'm saying?
You've got to bring it out into the open.
You have to just say it. Like, if your parents raised you all your life to think that if, God forbid, you don't believe in God, that you are going to hell, and you need to say it out loud to yourself that you're fucking scared, because that's a scary thought. And it's more true for some than it is for others. For me, I don't believe in hell, okay? So that doesn't scare me, because I wasn't raised that way and I don't believe in it, but I respect the fact that another person could be in a state of paralyzed panic as a result of that thought. And so Mikey was the kind of guy, is the kind of guy, that he was very, very stressed out about stepping outside of anything that was the norm and that was expected of him, right? In his job and his family. And he had a horribly abusive, and he has a horribly abusive wife. And so I think the thing is that we had to get to how scared he was to think of his wife with another man, because they were already incredibly estranged. But he needed to accept that thought that he hadn't even been able to come up with, which is why I put our dialogue in. And I always say, you know, it's a truncated dialogue, because, I mean, this is months and months of work put into, you know, a chapter, but because it takes a lot of trust and a lot of time for us to come up with our own truths, and certainly to share them with anyone else, much less ourselves, right? But when he came to the reason why he couldn't be without this person, this one certain client, this piece that I'm taking, he was free. He didn't understand why he felt so constricted. And there were parts of it that had to do with family. And like I say, this is several people in one. So for me, it's hard to personally extricated a little bit. But the most important thing from anyone to get out of this example is we must be true to ourselves. We must tell ourselves the truth. And then healing can begin. You don't need to change your life. You might choose to change your life, but you don't need to change your life. It's about accepting our feelings, so things that are in the unconscious, you know, underneath, can rise to the consciousness. And our brains don't need to protect us with pain anymore. I mean, you know, there's two levels of TMS. There's the pain, and then there's the, I want to solve my shitty life. Like, you know, like there's two things. But the pain part is manageable as long as we can bring our ugly, unconscious thoughts to our consciousness. I feel it's complicated. Is it making sense to you, Forrest?
It is making sense, and what it's reminding me of is the title of Dr. Sarno's last book. It's all about the divided mind, and if you can just have the conscious mind accept the dirty ugly, I'm sorry, I love that phrase, then the mind doesn't need to be divided anymore.
That's right. That's right. The protective brain doesn't need to be invited. And that is something that we don't, as a society, readily understand, which is somehow our brains feel that it is more painful for us as humans to feel, to recognize these ugly, the dirty uglies, than it is to have tremendous pain to the point where you're on disability and you're not working and you can't pick up your kids. Like, it's an evolutionary process that I believe truly will be different in 100 years. I mean, none of us are going to be here to see it per se, but I think that we can rewire our brains to not say that we need pain in order to shield ourselves from the dirty uglies.
Right, right. And it all comes down to awareness.
Yes.
Good books and good nonprofits. All right, so was someone, did I hear a voice, a new voice with a question?
It's me, Forrest. I called back. I had to leave momentarily.
Okay, did you have a question you wanted to ask? About the chapter.
No, I just got back on. It sounds very good. Well, I guess I have one question.
Okay, shoot.
Just on the basis of what you were just saying, Nicole, I was telling Forrest earlier I was doing well at healing for a couple of months, and then I stopped healing, and anxiety became greater.
Okay.
And I've wondered if it had to do with, and my problem, I'll just in a nutshell, was a frozen shoulder and arm that lost a lot of range of motion, plus pain in the arm.
Yeah.
And I started getting my range of motion back once I really accepted Sarno's idea. It took me a while, but I read one of the books, The Mind-Body Prescription, and then could raise my arm a lot higher the same evening. That was kind of the beginning,
awesome.
I guess.
That's awesome.
And, what I have to say, Paula, is that I brought up earlier the idea when we were talking about the novel. It is going to be tempting to give your novel, but tell us about the psychological things that are happening.
Well, I won't give the novel, just that that was the basic problem, and I think it's pretty evident that. And then my range of motion kept improving from there. But I didn't get it all back. It stopped coming back. I descended into more anxiety. And the question is, I've wondered if it was what you were saying, that my mind doesn't want to accept, or I don't want to deal with deeper emotions, or how our brains choose pain rather than, you know, why would I heal part of the way and then stop, I guess?
Because that's complete. Paula, it's Paula, right?
Yes.
Paula, the reason that happened is because it is completely normal and expected in TMS healing. Because, like anything else, it's like a honeymoon period, right? So, like, you've been suffering, you've been, like, going to doctors, you've been having tests,
yeah,
whatever it is. And then you realize, wait, this could be TMS. So now that you realize that, it's like, you know, hallelujah, like, okay, great, now I'm just going to be better, yay, and, you know, and you're going to journal. What ends up happening to a lot of people is they hit a wall after they've gotten a certain amount of pain out. And it's because of our troublesome, you know, those meddling kids, the brain, that is going to kick in harder. Because if you can picture, it's protecting you, and as these thoughts are floating and starting to break the surface of the conscious, unconscious to conscious thought, your brain is going to be dancing as fast as it can to not make you feel these feelings. And so that's the time, and I will summon, as I always, Dr. Sarno sitting on my shoulder saying, you have more work to do. And it sounds horrible, and I feel for you. I never want anyone to think that I'm being bossy, because I have more work to do. We all have more work to do. But when we're suffering with a chronic condition and we get ourselves healed just so far, it's go time, you know? I mean, and what I say in my book and what I say in my life every day is, life is not good or bad, happy or sad. It's a decision what hurts and what hurts worse. That's it. And I'm not saying that to be negative. I'm saying that because if you don't think that way, you get caught up in the fantasy that there's this third option. Like, you know, I leave my husband, I stay with my husband, or my husband becomes this amazing guy who he's never been before, and all of a sudden he wants to meet all my needs, and wouldn't that be great? And if we stay within the fantasy of the third option, we keep ourselves in pain. And that is something that I believe can really hurt people in their TMS recovery. I'm not a proponent of staying in an unhappy marriage. I'm not a proponent of divorce. I'm a proponent of honesty with oneself. You say what's really going on to yourself, with a therapist, you know, whatever it is that you choose to do, and then you can move past it in safety. And then whatever choice you make in your life will be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Does that help you at all, Paula?
Yes. I was telling Forrest I saw a therapist, but she didn't believe in TMS, even though she indicated a willingness in the beginning, and then it didn't work out because she kept suggesting there might be something wrong with me physically, you know, which is the last thing I need to hear.
Right.
So that didn't work out to see someone here where I am.
Well, like I said, I think, you know, maybe you and Forrest could talk off the call, or maybe you could look in the Forrest, you have like a practitioner list, right?
Absolutely. Just Google TMS Wiki therapist, find a therapist. It'll
yeah, and a lot of people, a lot of people do what I do, which is they work virtually. I mean, at this point, 80% of my entire, I mean, I have a practice here in Delaware. I see, I don't just see TMS patients, but since I published my book, I almost exclusively do, just because it's been such a need.
Speaks,
you know,
to people.
And I really want to help as many people as possible. But I think there are a lot of therapists out there that be willing to do virtual work. You know, I see some clients on FaceTime, so it looks kind of like this, where you see me. I see some clients on the phone, and I can tell you, it's I think it's equally as effective. I mean, of course, I always would wish I had someone in the room with me, but you know, my clients definitely could attest that even if we only talk on the phone, it's they look forward to it every week. They get to really work out what it is that they have been holding on to and understanding how to let it go, and that's what we all need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much for your question. That was helpful. I love it when people talk about their personal experiences because it gives Nicole a chance to strut her stuff, show us the application. So thank you for that, and perhaps we can use that to end the call. That was as far as the plan was to get today. Next week, we will finish up Chapter 6 and also do Chapter 7. The week after that, we will get to what is probably the most, or I think, a wonderful chapter. Nicole alluded to this earlier, Chapters 8 and 8.5, The How. And I think that'll be important. So stick with us. Those are very important chapters coming up. Any final thoughts that anyone has before we end? Herbie, did you want to jump in? Or Nicole, or any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I think he's got it, man. That's good.
All right. Well, thank you so much, everyone. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you, everybody, for coming. See you next week.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for
my pleasure.
For sharing your wisdom.